dreadful team offensively. Jamal in Queens, what's up, Jamal?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Good. What's happening?
A quick question. Yeah. I'm just going to ask you and hang up. This is the year of expectation for the Mets.
Right.
I mean, it's been very well discussed about the Wilpons financial troubles dating back to perhaps the Madoff thing and the expense of the stadium. And I'm just wondering if they get out slow out the gate and attendance is down, do you think it's possible that Citi Field might get struck by some Jewish lightning? I'm going to hang up and listen. Thank you.
He waited he waited for 2 hours to make that call.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed.
What?
Never doubt that you're the one,
and you can have your dream. Jamal, Mike Francesa, Jewish Lightning. Jamal in Queens, you know it's a prank call right away as soon as it's Jamal in Queens, what's up? And it's a white guy. You know it's due for failure there.
I mean, the only thing I have to say about that is Mike could not be more wrong. That was 100% worth it for that guy to wait 2 hours to do that.
I know. That's what's great. I know. It's so funny that he that's all he does. He makes fun of his listeners. Like, he makes fun of them for wanting to prank him. That, yeah, right. There is literally nothing better he could have done with his time.
Yeah, just like, put it on speakerphone, put it next to you,
right.
And when they pick up, it's not like he's sitting there like,
I know.
I hope they pick up.
Mike is just so butthurt. He's like, he waited 2 hours to ask about Jewish Lightning. I haven't seen Jewish Lightning since 1965. It's very rare. It's like a blue moon. I really don't think Citi Field will get hit.
But what if it does?
It's really unlikely. But if it does, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. David Wright's back will feel before it gets there. He can sense the weather. So anyway, this is a Cap Figure Podcast, episode 34. I'm Ryan DiPaolo. Who are you?
My name is Tom McLaughlin.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
So our threat to the last two episodes, we talked about the Hall of Fame. We took a little detour in our MLB look at, and we threatened to do the Padres next. We're going team by team through baseball, and we threatened to do the Padres unless somebody tweeted us a suggestion of a team, and Pierce suggested we do the Dodgers. So today we're doing the Dodgers, but I almost forgot who's number 34. Is episode 34.
Yes, so number 34, the player to wear number
players
34,
who have worn 34, yeah, sorry, yeah,
for the most number of years is Raleigh Fingers.
Mm.
The player with the highest WAR achieved while wearing number 34 is Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan.
And then a couple of other sort of like notable 34s. We have David Big Poppy Ortiz, Kirby Puckett, who's the right-handed version of Big Poppy.
Wait, just the way you said Big Poppy is like how our kids' kids are going to read about him. It's going to be like Herman Pee Wee Reese, like David Big Poppy Ortiz.
Babe Big Bambino. Ruth.
They're like, man, back in the day before everybody was one race, there used to be Dominicans and whites, and he was like the one minority that Boston could accept per time. Yeah. So any others, or that's it?
And then, I mean, you got Bryce Harper, Kerry Wood, AJ Burnett.
Do you have a feel for this before we look it up, before the episode? Do you pay attention to numbers at all?
I sort of. Some of the numbers are more sort of prevalent than others. Like 34, you know, I could just make the association right off the bat. Like Nolan Ryan, David Ortiz, Bryce Harper. But then you have weird
numbers. You thought of
Bryce
and you thought of all them, like...
Yeah, I did.
That's crazy. I don't think about numbers at all.
But then, you know, like weird numbers, obviously not.
Yo, what's it... the other time you thought about numbers, and I think it's funny, and it's like any kid who goes to Yankee Stadium who lives around here sees like Monument Park and they're like, oh my god, there's so many numbers. But you took it to the cooler level of seeing Monument Park and all the retired numbers and saying, oh my god, what number is going to be left for me when I make the Yankees?
Yeah, I was really afraid that I was going to have to wear a stupid looking number like 103 or 117.
You gave yourself 80 on the 20-80 scale at that point.
Yeah, I mean, my sort of like probability statistics were a little bit off, that there would be like 90 additional retired numbers at that point. But if you look at the Yankees, like all the single digit numbers are now gone.
No, it's insane.
Yeah.
So anyway, now we're here with the Cap Figure Podcast. We're doing the Dodgers, who are interesting and not, because they didn't make too many changes. But first, what happened to them the last couple years, Tom, or last year?
Yeah, I mean, they've been pretty consistent last year, 91 wins. They lost in the division series.
Championship series.
2015, 92 wins. Made the playoffs, won their division. 2014, 94 wins, won the NL West. And 2013, 92 wins, won the NL West. So, I mean, I guess I didn't even realize it, but
no,
winning
it's funny.
4 years in a row, the NL West is pretty impressive when you have the Giants and the Rockies have been good certain years. The Diamondbacks have been decent certain years, so.
It's funny because, like, it's funny that they've been that consistent, because even within this last season, I remember not thinking of the Dodgers as that good for some reason, because they were behind the Giants and they caught up, and I don't even know what it is about the team that doesn't excite. It's some, like, rhetorical nonsense, but, like, one of the guys on the Baseball Tonight podcast, I forget his name of the producer, but he kept being like, everybody underrates the Dodgers somehow, and I think it's because of how their payroll versus, like, success level. The ratio is not, like, as saucy as you might hope or something, maybe. Who knows?
No, well, I think that's it.
Also, it's Clayton Kershaw, like, games where he pitched versus games he didn't. They were, like, 500 in games without him. And then, like, winning every game with him.
I mean, that's just one of the realities of having the best pitcher in the game by far.
Yeah,
that's going to happen.
He's part of the team.
But, yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, when you think about a $260 million payroll, you would expect more. But you have to realize, like, part of getting some of those players that they've built this team around, like Adrian Gonzalez, part of that was taking on the contract of Carl Crawford, which people, you know, really didn't know necessarily which direction he was headed at the time. So they've had a lot of dead money, and yes, they've overpaid a lot of people, and I think that overall has, like, this negative effect, especially in an era where I myself fall victim to this too, where it's like I'm trying to maximize everything and have, like, this efficient team that's all first or second year players,
right,
who are, like, the best at their position, and we can make, like, you know, an all-star team with, like, Correa, Seager,
right,
Bryce Harper for, you know, $50 million.
That's such a good point. It's like, but success in reality rarely looks like the Cubs. It usually looks like this, like,
yep,
or whatever, where it's like messy, like, so, like, one great pitcher and then some up and down ones, injuries, you know, Puig disappointed, whatever it is.
I think they had the most players that made it onto the active 25-man roster during the season, I think, in the history of baseball, because they kept having all these injuries. They would bring in relievers for a little bit, send them back down to the minors. So that's a new trend anyway. But
right,
just like the injuries that have hit them. I mean, I think it's pretty impressive that they've been able to win 90 plus games.
It's awesome. And specifically last season, you know, they have a new manager, right? It's like Dave,
yeah,
Roberts.
Yeah, forget that too.
And he did well. He was aggressive. I didn't like him putting in the NLCS. For those who don't remember, they lost in 6 games to the Cubs. They won the NLDS in 5 games. They won game 5 on the road against the Nationals. Clayton Kershaw won both his starts in the divisional series, and he closed out the last 2 outs in game 5, sort of stupidly, I thought, but because then he had to pitch game 2 of the championship series, and maybe he could have pitched 3 games. But anyway, they had a good playoff, and, you know, they were up 2-1 on the Cubs, and it looked like they had a chance. They were there with a chance to beat the best team. It was almost as good as you could hope for with a team like the Cubs this year. And I don't know, Dave Roberts just, he aggressive. He pushed Kenley Jansen as far as he could go, so that's cool. So you have a manager, I guess, right? People were worried that before the season, that after Mattingly left, that Roberts was too, like, he had never managed, and that, like, a team of veterans and high-profile guys-ish wouldn't, like, respect him. But, like, I guess you earn respect by making ballsy moves that pay off in the playoffs, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he seemed to work out. I mean, you know, like I still keep thinking, I guess I'm falling victim to it still. Like I have, you know, we should be more excited about this team. But I guess the story that's kind of sticking in my mind is like this off season. Yes, they kept very important parts of the team, but did they get better than the Cubs?
Well, yeah, I mean, that too. I thought you were going to say something else, but yeah, did they get better than the Cubs? It's a funny like fallacy because I don't think of the Mets excite me, but I'm a Mets fan, but I don't care if they're better than the Cubs. They just excite me because I feel like they have a chance to beat them. Who knows? But anyway, so now we're here. Now it's this off season. We look at this team and it's like, okay. You were good. You were in a position to win. You had the emergence of Corey Seager and Julio Urias as expected, right? Like they both were as good as advertised. These top two can't miss prospects coming up in 2016. They both came up and killed it. Corey Seager got to play more than Urias, but I don't know. So what are your thoughts? Like you're the Dodgers coming in the off season. What would you do? And then I guess we'll discuss what they actually have done. Like Justin Turner was going to be a free agent. Rich Hill was a free agent. Kenley Jansen was a free agent. Those are the major free agents that they could have lost, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they did the best thing they could, which was to retain each of those players. Because even though each of them has faults to a certain degree, like Rich Hill hasn't made it through a full season, I think that they were able to actually get each of those players on a relatively team-friendly contract. I mean, they have the overarching problem of having this like ridiculously high payroll. But that being said, I think locking those three players up was the most important thing they could have done. And then I think the focus has to shift after this offseason, starting like right now, is like, I'm just noticing looking at their depth chart, they have like a lot of good players at a lot of positions. So if there's some way that they can sort of package those players together to kind of take a step up at positions, it's like with fantasy football where you want to take two above average players and turn it into an elite player.
Right, right.
So I'm sure they know this and I'm sure they've been trying to do that. But that would, to me, just kind of make the most sense.
Well, it's sort of de facto what they did by trading Jose De Leon, right, for Logan Forsythe very recently. When was this? Like
yesterday.
That's an awesome deal, I think. If you think about it, last year they had a mix of failing Howie Kendrick and then
Chase Utley,
who did well, but he's done, right? He retired, or is he still playing?
Well, he's still on the free agent market. I think
he's on the amazing all veteran free agent team that could win like 65 games.
I think he may end up in somewhere like Kansas City because they've had problems filling second base.
Well, that'd be perfect fit.
I think he's not a great player, but I think he is definitely a major league roster viable.
Well, regardless, they upgraded the Dodgers.
Oh, absolutely.
Huge for Logan Forsythe. So that's sort of a spot you're talking about, and then maybe they could do in the outfield. You know, it's tough when they're at the max of their payroll. I guess heading into the offseason, if I'm the Dodgers, they kind of started to go down this path that they continued on this offseason when they didn't re-sign Zach Greinke, and they were like, you know, we're going to be a deep veteran team. Like, it's funny to have re-signed three big free agents in the offseason. That's not very common, and people were sort of surprised that they didn't keep Greinke when they had such a big payroll last offseason, but that worked out. It looks like Greinke didn't have a great season, and the Dodgers had a really good staff by hodgepodging with, you know, Kazmir for whenever he played a little bit, and Rich Hill was a great deal. Kenta Maeda and Urias came up. They have a million starters now, so yeah, that is what I would do too. I would look at it like, you know, trade two slots for one or whatever, but there's not many other places besides second base. Like, that is one of the main positions in their team that I would want to do that. Maybe left field, you know, I would also like to do that. But yeah, they have enough guys to take a stab.
It becomes tough. I think that their strategy of letting Greinke go in hindsight was very smart. And, you know, the thing with the players that they did sign, you know, if you notice, 3-year deal, 4-year deal, 5-year deal, not 8 years, $270 million for a 32-year-old starting pitcher.
Right.
Even though he might be like the closest thing to Greg Maddux we've seen after the 2015 season, I think, you know, the Dodgers front office, they just realize, like, we just can't do that, especially with, you know, 2018. You have Harper on the market. LA is a huge market. They're going to probably want Machado or Harper. And if you were to have signed Greinke, you know, you're locking up 30-something, 37, 38 million a year.
Right.
For the next 8 years.
And like, it's like rich or poor. I mean, it seems the trend of teams is to not go for those mega deals as much. But I mean, I guess that's not necessarily true. If a great pitcher who's like 30 comes on the free agent market, people will go for it. But, you know, anyway, so the Dodgers, the other thing, the last thing about their offseason before we get to some points Pierce brought up, I want to ask you about. You know, it, also, they had as good of a year. Like, at first glance, I'm thinking about them this offseason, and it's not that exciting for me. But they re-signed three major pieces, and they were as good as they could, like, realistically, I guess, be. I don't know. Like we were talking that they were as close as you can reasonably be expected to give the Cubs a fight in a series, and they had a chance to win and go to the World Series. That's a team you want to repeat. Like,
yeah,
you would sign up for that every year to win, to be in the championship series and be up 2-1.
Absolutely.
If you could know that you could retain a team with that much skill, you would do that all the time. Obviously, some players get older and some are emerge, though. But so anyway, let me Pierce, who tweeted us, what's his Twitter? At Pierce Boy?
Piercy Boy.
Piercy Boy. At Piercy Boy. Brought up some points I want to ask you about just in general about the Dodgers. Okay, Tom?
Yep.
So what do you think about Urias? He said Urias didn't really pitch enough innings given how well he pitched.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Yeah. I said he said Urias didn't pitch enough innings given how well he pitched.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky topic, right? I think that there's two points to that when you look at the overall innings pitched at the end of the year. I think it's easy to say they did the right thing because, he's 19 years old. I think he had pitched 110 innings the year before. So, you know, you do have to build that up. I mean, most of the time we're just not paying attention to those innings pitched for a 19-year-old because
right, he's 19.
They're in A-ball. But what I will say is I think that especially I remember watching a couple of games where he would be throwing like – you know, a shutout through five innings and they would pull the plug on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think, you know, this year they're definitely going to let the reins off a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think it was a matter of, like, I don't think it was a matter of him not performing well or it, you know, maybe part of it was the new school strategy that the Dodgers certainly seem to be employing of giving a pitcher only twice through the lineup or something like that, because he had a lot of five-inning outings, which is, like, partially a trend with guys like, you know, Kyle Hendricks or whoever. But also, yeah, he's young. I guess you got to protect his arm. You know, I don't know. I don't friggin' know what protects their arm, I guess, but if that's what these people think. I mean, he was really good. And then how about Jock Peterson, right? Pierce has pointed out that he sucks. Pierce pointed out that he strikes out a lot, and which he does. He strikes out way too much, but maybe a good trade piece. And you said to me when we discussed this before the show, you were like, yeah, well, I still think he has upside. And then I made the genius counterpoint of saying, well, that may make him trade piece, bro, because if other people think he has upside but you think he's no good, then that is a perfect candidate for a trade piece. I guess you could wait until he has some Jay Bruce success and then trick a team like the Mets into trading for him. I had a MLB The Show franchise. I was the Mets, right? And I last year, and he had potential A, and I traded for him. I gave up, I forget who, it was like a big piece, like DeGrom or something. And he ended up becoming like an 88 overall player. It was a really great deal. But, you know, if I had started that franchise 2 weeks later, he might have had only potential B, right?
Yes.
after a 25 strikeout more week.
Yeah, I mean, it's
you don't have to fake anything to say if you don't got nothing.
No, I think this is another excellent point on, like, the psychology of the game, right? Because Jock Peterson had a lot of hype coming into the league, and he started on an absolute tear, right?
Yeah, hell so, yeah. He's hitting home runs, playing great defense.
Let's assume that that wasn't the case, right?
Like, what, he didn't have that hype?
He didn't have that, you know, absolute tear coming into the league, and he was just an average player. I think, you know, there would be less of sort of like a reflex to be like, get rid of this guy.
That's a very good point.
Because he's a solid fielder.
Yeah, he had a rebound year. Like, compared to his 2015, like,
second half,
right. His second half of 2015 when he totally just couldn't find the ball. He still walks, even though he strikes out a lot. I think he walked a decent number of times. And he plays center field, and he plays a good center field, right?
Yeah.
And he's a left-handed hitter. That's cute, you know, even if he only plays against righties. But, you know, speaking of another guy who, given their hype, totally messed up our opinion of them now, or maybe not, is Puig, is like – the juiciest talking point on the Dodgers. I don't like describing men, grown men, as juicy talking points. It's a little weird, but Puig obviously was like a 5-4 win player in 2013 and 14. In the last 2 years, he's only been worth a win and a 1.4 wins. The story just came out recently that he's like, I want to be a starter while I am walking. Is that a good imitation?
Yeah, it's pretty close. I want to be a starter if it's not here somewhere else, which...
And it was like, by the way, Puig, you don't walk, you strike out. Ha!
Got him.
I want to be the starter or I am striking out.
I mean, I don't know. That guy, I just always thought he was a little bit of a clown. I mean, he has just an enormous ego, which he had those two great first seasons. But the fact of the matter is, like, he has... If you honestly look at the statistics, he has not contributed in any meaningful way for what, like over 2 years now?
Yeah, besides, yeah, right. He hit for a really high average. He's only walked like 25 times the last 2 years. He's worth one win. That's an average player. It's above replacement level by a win, but the average WAR for a baseball player is what, like 1.5 wins, I think, or something.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. He's not producing to even the replacement level.
But
in
2 years, he was worth 10 wins. So it's still, that's why he's gotten such a long leash, I think, by people like me and stuff, because he was so good. He was worth 10 wins in 2 years. Even though it may not be repeatable and it was high BABIP or whatever, he still, you know, he had a year where he walked 66 times to, you know, maybe that was all fear of how hot he was swinging. Who knows? His arm is cute.
I mean, what I have to say about the statement he made is, like, he's not saying anything,
yeah,
right? Because
yeah,
if you
better.
Think about it, like, there's nobody blocking him
right.
from taking that spot. Like, this has been totally self-inflicted, and yes, like, the off-the-field stuff does contribute to, like, the fact that your teammates don't like you. You know, there's a new manager, he's already tired of you, the front office has been pretty much trying to trade you now for a while, and everybody kind of has this insight that, like, you're a hothead, you don't get along with other people,
you
think you're a lot better than you are. Yeah, so,
right.
I mean, look, you want to be a starter, well, I mean...
It's on you.
Yeah.
It's on you if you lose to a platoon of like, Kiki Hernandez, good guys.
Scott Van Slyke and
Scott Van Slyke, Andre Ethier, exactly. It's on you. And then the other... point that I wanted to get to that Pierce made, he made one about Baez, but you know that I think that every he Pierce who is a Dodgers fan said that Baez seems to always give up a crucial run. I think this is just, it may be true, but I think that every fan feels that way about some of their relievers, whether or not it's fair. Like it's sort of like a typical thing to feel like, well, my closer's shaky even though he's good, you know, like you've seen him do that more than other people have when just looking at his stats. But I don't know. I Baez is cool. I don't like his chin strap. But how about he says Gonzo sucks, right? Pierce is like, yo, Adrian Gonzalez is getting old. We got to pay this dude $25 million for 2 more years. I don't like it. And as a matter of fact, I want Bellinger, a prospect who made it up to AAA in 2 years and is a good first base blah, 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 played center field a little bit. He could hit for power. I want that guy. What would you say to that, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, all I would really say to
that... I hope I represented your opinion well, Pierce.
All I would really say to that is I think he is the future, but the fact of the matter is, like, even if Adrian Gonzalez right now is at the same level as Bellinger, he's going to get $50 million the next 2 years, so it's just... It would just be a bad sign organizationally for them to put that player on the bench when he's owed $50 million. Although I don't agree with that philosophy in theory.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you always want the best players, but what I'm getting at is, like, you know, you bring Bellinger up, right? It starts the clock on his service time. So you're kind of wasting two different assets at that point because you have $25 million on the bench and you're eating up 2 years of service time for a young prospect. And, you know, quite frankly, like, Adrian Gonzalez, I know that he goes through, like, you know, these streaks, and I'm pretty sure he ended the season.
He had 18 home runs, but he ends up, he could hit, like, you know, five in 2 weeks. Like,
he's one of the best hitters in the game.
Well,
you know,
not anymore, but he can be in a period.
Yeah, and
he hit, here's his stats last year. He hit .285, OPS of .784. His OPS is in decline. Like, usually, well, it's close to what it is. His career OPS is .854, but, like, since he's 30, and about since he came to the Dodgers, it's been about low 800s, high 780s, you know? So he's definitely not as bad, but I get it. It's like, if you're a fan and you see a mediocre, like, if you have a first baseman who hits, in the NL especially, it's frustrating to have a first baseman who hits 18 home runs and only bats .280. And then there's this, like, this prospect who could be even better, but yeah. But the grass is always greener. It always looks better. You know, it's like, I don't like his profile as a player that much myself. He's worth 2 wins last year, 4 the year before, but he's a good enough piece on a winning team, at least for now. You know, I can't imagine Bellinger being better. It's similar to the Teixeira Bird stuff, maybe, right? Almost where Bird may be better, but, like, you know, Teixeira is a solid, really good major leaguer. You know, Gonzalez is a little bit worse than Teixeira was, but it's a similar situation where it's always exciting, the newer, younger guy, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, and it's so sort of the same feeling I have, like, at the end of the year when, like, Aaron Hicks is playing right field and we have Clint Frazier hitting, like, .340 at AAA.
The Yankees are a similar type of, you know, it used to be the Yankees fan sentiment, maybe a similar type of feeling as the Dodgers or any fan base, but in particular when you have that big of a payroll and you get somewhat spoiled, but not really, I'm not, like, making fun of you guys, but you get spoiled by, like, getting a new signing every offseason or a new player coming up. It's like they joke here that the Yankees fans won't show up unless they have a new toy in the offseason that they sign, right? Like,
yeah,
that they need to, like, get Jacoby Ellsbury and Tanaka or something, or the fans won't come. And I'm not saying Dodgers fans are doing that, like, consciously, but it's just natural to want to see the next thing and get excited. But chill out. Be grateful. You got Seager and Urias, man. You got a shortstop and a left-handed starter.
Yeah,
eat it.
And I was going to say, even, like, hypothetically, let's say, you know, we were talking about them re-signing those three players this offseason. Well, let's just say hypothetically they signed someone like, I mean, this wouldn't work with the players on the field, but let's say they signed, like, Edwin Encarnacion. Like, they already have a first baseman. Just humor me here. But then because of that, they couldn't sign, let's say, Rich Hill and Justin Turner. I mean, you're making the team will be worse, you know? So it's almost kind of like these guys are getting paid more, yes, but you have to remember, like, just because you didn't win a World Series doesn't diminish the fact that, like, these guys are legitimate all-star level players.
Yeah.
You would be much happier if you were getting them from another team.
Right. Exactly. That's what they used to say about the Yankees with their free agent signings too. Like in the, I just have a sense of, like, the talk radio talking points of the Yankees. I'm sure a lot of fan bases just think about stuff like this, but that, like, you know, you get more enamored with players you don't see every day than your own. It's similar to the bullpen point I was bringing up, where it's like, oh, our closer's shaky.
Yeah.
You know, you watch him be shaky and give up hits, but other fans looking at that guy's stat line will just be like, he's pretty good. All right, so we're almost done. The last thing, I just want to bash Dodgers fans for a little bit. You guys suck. Your stadium is hideous. You guys leave early to beat the traffic. You don't really care about the team. You stole the franchise from Brooklyn. You don't really deserve it. The stadium looks like hell. It looks like somebody on acid in the late 60s, early 70s was like, let me build this awesome new school futuristic thing, and it just looks like a triangle monster vomited, like, beige.
You know what it looks like? You know, remember when we went to Vegas and there's that part of old Vegas where they, like, kind of play up like the Frank Sinatra, like old school, like 70s drive up movie theater. Like that's kind of how I almost kind of feel about Dodger Stadium.
Like it's a cigarette holder and stuff.
Yeah, like everybody's like driving up in their car to watch because it is. It looks kind of ridiculous. Like it was the futuristic look in the day when like my grandpa was driving up to McDonald's.
It looks like a drive through projection screen, like their outfield, like Megatron, their Jumbotron and stuff.
Yeah. And the one other thing we kind of, I guess, skipped over was, like, when we were talking about them getting Logan Forsythe, you know, the rumors for almost 2 months were that they were definitely getting Brian Dozier. And that obviously is not going to happen now. But so I think that could be another point in the Dodgers fans not being as excited about Logan Forsythe.
Logan Forsythe, even though Dozier hits home runs, I hate Brian Dozier. I'm exaggerating. But as a player, his profile, he does all his damage against lefties. He sort of sells out. He had a great year last year for home runs, but Forsythe is an amazing fielder. He hits more consistently, walks more consistently. You know, he doesn't hit for the power, obviously, but he's a much, much, much better player. I would every day, 10 times out of 10, rather have Logan Forsythe.
Yeah, and he's an NL player. Like I said to you before we taped this, he didn't play anywhere else other than second base last year, but he has a track record, I believe, in 2014 where he played something like 80 games at second base, 20 at first base, 30 at third base. So, I mean, look, like for the NL, you know, the variability you see with the Cubs, right? You can bring someone in as a pinch hitter and then you can move your second baseman to shortstop. Not that they're going to take Seager out, but having that flexibility helps a lot with the matchups towards the end of the game, especially in the playoffs.
And especially a deep team like the Dodgers with, like, Scott Van Slyke or whoever has these splits, you know, like
Ethier hits righties really well. So does Van Slyke. So,
All right, so that's it. I hope I represented you well, Pierce, and I hope that Dodgers fans know that you're all pathetic. No, I'm kidding. I like you guys. I was watching the World Series of Poker, and you guys were represented very poorly. There was this horrible, horrible playing old man at a feature table with a giant, gaudy Dodgers hat on, and he had a shirt with rolled up cuffs that had like those like I forgot what they're called, but like purple
cufflinks.
No, they're like it's like a pattern where they look like eggplants. You know, like it's like a popular pattern with swirls, but it was just very
Paisley.
But he also had on these like unisex like bracelet bead things that they advertised in my hotel room in the Harrah's the other day,
mm-hmm.
where it's like Tommy Johnson bracelets for both sexes.
Good luck.
Yeah, he looked really bad. So you guys got to email him and tell him to stop being on TV with a Dodgers hat. All right.
Tell him.
Please, you know, leave a review, tweet us, do all that stuff. Thank you. Jamal in Queens.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it.